Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Campus Fury, a KNX in-depth special.
Here's Chief Correspondent Charles Feldman.
Welcome to our show. This has been a very interesting week, not only across the country, but certainly here in the LA area with developments at both USC and UCLA in particular, UCLA. And so we are going to spend the next half hour talking to two students from UCLA and two students from USC about their opinions about what has been going on, their observations in some cases, and we'll take it from here. We have with us in the studio Rachel Burnett, who is a fourth-year undergraduate at UCLA. She's a double major in psychology and Middle Eastern studies. She is the UCLA chapter president of J Street U. That's a group that describes itself as pro-Israel, pro-peace, and pro-democracy. It's a lot of pros. Okay, Rachel, thank you for being with us. Jonathan Park is a third-year undergraduate at USC. He's majoring in applied and computational mathematics. He is the managing digital editor of the Daily Trojan. Jonathan, thank you for being with us. Edmund Tuck is a third-year undergraduate at UCLA, majoring in political science. He previously was a reporter at the Daily Bruin and was present at the pro-Palestinian camp at Royce Hall Tuesday night when it was attacked. And last but not least is Jordan Renville, who is a fourth-year undergraduate at USC, majoring in cinema and media studies. He is the photo editor for the Daily Trojan. Before we begin, let me point out that KNX has reached out to the UCLA chancellor, to the USC president, to groups like Students for Justice in Palestine and the Hillel Foundations at both USC and UCLA. They have all either declined to participate in this broadcast or they failed to respond. Thanks, guys. All of you. So let me, now two of you, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, two of you were at UCLA last night. Am I correct?
I was.
You were, and you were. All right. So let me start with Edmund and with Rachel. Rachel, let me start with you. Why were you there?
I was there. I have fundamental disagreements with a lot of the goals of the specific protest, and then also with SJP as a larger movement. That said, I think it's important for me as a student to see what's happening on my campus. And also, I was shocked and appalled both at the horrific violence that took place on Tuesday night and then also at the lack of response from the university, the failure to protect students. You know, while I might have political disagreements with the movement, you know, I oppose violence against our students. The fact that a mob of non-students was able to come in, violently assault people in the encampment, bear mace them, pepper spray them, throw firecrackers into the encampment. Quite frankly, someone could have been killed. Friends told me that they feared for their lives. That to me and the lackluster response was just completely unacceptable. And so it was, you know, important to me, particularly, I think, because I disagree with the protest so fundamentally. I think that it was important for me, nevertheless, to show solidarity against the violence.
Okay. Let me ask you two quick questions on that. What is it, when you say you're against the goals, what goals are you against? And you mentioned that those who were moving in on the protesters, you described them as not being students. How do you know that?
Yeah, so based on like footage and what has sort of been reported by like media outlets as well as on Twitter, it seems that maybe there were students there, but I haven't really seen any evidence of there being students. Most of the people looked older. I heard that there were also some high school students, but that was, you know, maybe a rumor. You know, I'd like to have more faith in our students and say that they wouldn't enact such horrific violence against their peers, but maybe that's me being hopeful. In terms of my disagreements with the goals of the protest, I think I oppose divestment because I think that it's not the best way to achieve what I believe is necessary, both presently achieving, you know, a bilateral ceasefire, end to the war, release of hostages, and a diplomacy-first approach. And then more broadly, you know, I support an end to the illegal occupation of the West Bank, as well as freedom and equality for all Israelis and Palestinians between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, and, you know, each of them to have their own form of national self-determination.
Edmund Tuck, you were there at UCLA last night as well. Why were you there?
For several different reasons. First off, to support my friends, many of whom were taking very active part in the protest, both in the encampment and on the outside. Also, just to observe, I took a lot of videos just to have evidence of what went down so that we can go back through the footage. If there's ever any legal battles that is needed, then we have probably at this point hours of footage that we can use. I also just really want to mention solidarity and honor and point out how brave the people who were arrested this morning are. Apparently more than 200, many of whom are students, faculty, members of our community, many of whom are my friends, many of whom who I knew. Immense bravery from them. I hope that they're doing well, and hope to see that they are released soon. I then was also there on Tuesday night into Wednesday morning and saw a lot of horrific events. I saw students getting pulled out of the encampment, beat with metal rods, lots of people getting maced. We know there's video evidence of a student who had been, I think, cut in the back of the head, was bleeding profusely. So, I mean, that's just to name a couple things. And obviously the police kind of just stood by and watched it happen.
And then took hours to even arrive on the scene.
And then I was out there yesterday into this morning and watched as the same police who watched and stood by on Tuesday night into Wednesday morning move in and arrest a student.
Jonathan Park, you are at USC, which didn't have the kind of violent confrontation that happened at UCLA, but had its own issues with this. And you're the managing digital editor, right, for the Daily Trojan. What are some of your observations about what went down at USC?
For us, that sort of incident we had was last Wednesday, which is basically the first day of the encampment, which is pretty unique to USC. I think other encampments have at least had a couple of days to kind of establish themselves before the administration either decided it was illegal or they thought it like encroached on campus safety or whatever. And they brought down like law enforcement and stuff like that, as we saw in Columbia. But for us, it was like the day of, like 4:30 a.m. I was there watching them set up the tents. By 5:30 p.m., we had like dozens of LAPD officers at the scene, like encircling the encampment. And by 9:30, it was done. So it was pretty interesting to see like just how quickly USC moved to like kind of get that encampment out. Obviously, the encampment has survived since then.
And you did not take part in any of the protests or counter-protests, or did
you? No. Just as journalists, like, we kind of, like, just stay on the sidelines and be as objective as we can. Obviously, like, there are people we know, like, in the encampment, so there's a degree of, like, wiggle room with that, but, like, we try to, like, kind of stay to the sidelines as much as possible.
Jordan, you also are a student journalist at USC. You're the, as we said, photo editor for the Daily Trojan, right? Would you have taken, if you weren't in that role as a student journalist, would you have taken part in either the protest or the counter-protests?
I'll say that's a hard question. I think that this entire movement, what we've been seeing at both UCLA and USC, is a general attitude towards students versus the establishment. And I think that from that respect, I would have definitely taken part. I'm not sure if like it would be pro-Palestine or pro-Israel, but in a sense that like students should be allowed to voice their opinions on their campuses, whether it be private or public, is something that I feel like strongly about. I know a lot of my peers feel strongly about too. So I would definitely be out there in that respect.
But you mentioned something just now that's kind of interesting, I think, because you suggest that there are multiple reasons, perhaps, why all over the country, let alone here in LA, some students are protesting, and it may be more than just the Middle East.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's been more than just the Middle East since the Civil Rights Movement, since before we have documented accounts of what's been happening on our campuses. There's always been an attitude of students versus the establishment and versus the quote-unquote authoritarian leadership that we've been subjected to. So it's just natural for people to react in a way that is against that and to stand up for their beliefs.
How have you been? I'm curious, how do you think you've been subjected to authoritarian leadership?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say authoritarian is like the correct word necessarily. However, what we've been seeing on our campuses is really a direct example. At the end of the day, if it is students and if it is people just trying to peacefully express their beliefs, and the reaction of the administrations of various universities is to just immediately bring in law enforcement. I mean, we saw in USC that the encampment was set up at 4 a.m. and DPS was there by like 10. Right. So that's a period of 6 hours where people were just getting ready to get the encampment started, and they were already just trying to bring it down and not hear what these students were trying to say.
It's not just protesters at UCLA who have been arrested and violently detained, but journalists as well from the Daily Bruin. Daily Bruin journalists, even before the violence, there was a lot of rhetorical violence. You know, student protesters were threatened with rape. I personally was there with an organization called Standing Together. I had a sign saying ceasefire and hostage deal now, and I was spat on by a pro-Israel protester and told that I should have been slaughtered in the kibbutzim on October 7th. And then there has been, rhetorical violence from the encampment. But when I interacted with people from the encampment, even, expressing my disagreement, I was mostly met with, some disagreement, but it was by and large a peaceful interaction, whereas when I was at the Sundays event and pro-Israel people saw us, and I think the word pro-Israel is a little bit of a misnomer, because I think that the best thing you can do for Israel is the best thing you can do for Palestinians and vice versa, but people wearing Israeli flags told me that I was not a Jew, that I'm a capo, that I should and there was just various, misogynistic and racist invective shouted at us.
All right, let's leave it there for the minute. When we come back and continue with our KNX in-depth special, Campus Fury, we're going to talk about everything from anti-Semitism to the youth vote and President Biden.
Campus Fury, a KNX in-depth special.
Once again, here's Chief Correspondent Charles Feldman.
Welcome back. We're talking with two students from USC and two students from UCLA. With us is Rachel Burnett, Jonathan Park, Edmund Tuck, and Jordan Renville. Does anybody here buy the argument that some have been making that there is at a core, if not all, but at the core of some of these protests, anti-Semitism?
I wholeheartedly disagree with that.
And that's Edmund Tuck.
Yes. Of course, you will have some people that no one agrees with who will try and infiltrate and harbor anti-Semitic ideas. But I can say from people I know from the encampment, if something like that were to happen, they would be immediately reprimanded. We don't tolerate hate of any type on campus. We don't want to tolerate any hate on campus, whether that is anti-Semitism or Islamophobia. From everything that I have seen, I wholeheartedly disagree with the assertion that there's been anti-Semitism running rampant.
Jordan.
Yes.
And also Jonathan, do you guys agree? Is there any element or not any element of anti-Semitism in this?
I think that's, again, an interesting question.
And that's Jordan speaking now.
Yeah, this is Jordan. I think that there's a culture of being angry in a lot of the encampments, and whether, you know, you believe that they have like a right to be angry is up to you. But a lot of people are angry. A lot of people are frustrated at what they're seeing overseas. And I think that that can be sometimes translated and expressed in a way that comes out as anti-Semitism. Do I believe that anybody in the encampment set out and their main goal was to, like, you know, hate Jewish people? No. I think that the main goal was to stop the violence that's happening in Gaza. And I think that a lot of this, honestly, like the attention that we're even giving to it, kind of distracts from that aspect of the encampment itself.
Totally agree.
So I don't think it was necessarily, I don't think it's necessarily like anything was started out of anti-Semitism, but I do think that there is just, like, honestly, there's a culture of anger from both sides.
Like, I guess what I will say is the only like virulent incidents of anti-Semitism that we witnessed at USC during these couple weeks has just been like from a few outsiders that came in. Mm-hmm. There were like pro-Israel people that had set up like a symbolic Seder outside of the main entrance that we have, mm-hmm. just calling for the release of hostages. It was like they set up a table, like they had like kidnap posters on each of the chairs. They had like food set up, and there was just some middle-aged guy that came over, started shouting something about Nazis and just all sorts of insults toward like Jewish people and things like that. So really, we've kind of been witnessing like anti-Semitism, and none really like outwardly by like actual USC students or USC community members.
Rachel?
I mean, I'm Jewish, and so anti-Semitism is obviously something I'm deeply in tune with, aware of. That said, I have seen profound anguish and anxiety from the Jewish community because of these protests. I do think that there, for many Jewish students who identify as Zionist, it's not seen as an attack on their politics, but an attack on their identity. And while, you know, I have my own politics, I never want to be the person to disregard anyone's legitimate pain. That said, I think we have to distinguish between being uncomfortable, being emotionally unsafe, and being physically unsafe. I think that more than I've seen anti-Semitism, and I have seen anti-Semitism from the pro-Palestine movement. I think we see this in things like Zionists control the media, for example. But I more than that, I've seen a problem of dehumanization of Israelis in terms of, you know, there was a sign at UCLA that said, Israelis are native to hell. And I think maybe, you know, you can classify that as anti-Semitic or not. But regardless of how you classify that, that's something that's, you know, chauvinistic and bigoted and discrimination against people because of where they're from. And so I think when we have this conversation of is something anti-Semitic or not, we distract from the larger point of like, is this acceptable or not?
If you're joining us now, this is a KNX In-Depth special, Campus Fury, and I'm Charles Feldman, and we're talking with two students from UCLA and two students from USC. If you go back and look at the history of student protests, say the Vietnam War, those protests developed over a substantial period of time. Even the protests against apartheid in South Africa was something that took quite a long time to get going. This protest has caught many people, politicians and others, by surprise because of the rapidity of how this has spread from coast to coast. Edmund, are you surprised by that, and can you explain it?
I'm not surprised, personally. Obviously, the role of social media is huge. People can organize much easier.
Does everybody agree with that, by the way?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That social media is one of the driving forces? Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Whether it's TikTok, Instagram, or, you know, other messaging sites, it's become a lot easier to organize, not only in intercampus, but outside of the campuses. Like, I know that the people at the UCLA encampment were making connections with people across the country as well.
Jordan, why do you think, I mean, there are a lot of causes in the world, and there are a lot of places, unfortunately, where people are being subjected to all sorts of horrible things. I mean, just take one example. Russia is basically pulverizing Ukraine on a daily basis and has been for quite some time now. Why do you think this particular issue seems to have resonated so much with students?
Well, I think, for one, it's the classic underdog story, and I feel like a lot of Palestinian voices have been, at least in popular media, portrayed as the underdog. And it's very easy for like a population like us, especially in America, to like get behind that story.
But Jews aren't considered underdogs?
I think in this situation, there is at least from what I've been hearing from people, a viewpoint that Israel is kind of on the more like enforcement side of it and are kind of the ones doing like the wrong in the situation. This is what I've heard from like many other people.
Jonathan, why do you think this has really sort of taken root and spread rather quickly?
I mean, yeah, just expanding on the social media part, just from the student journalist perspective, like as people who kind of watch, who have been watching the encampment and the protests, like for example, if law enforcement starts moving towards a protest, we're able to get that news out in like 2 minutes or less. If on Instagram we're like making a post or something, that's like 5 minutes. So just the speed at which we're able to put out information is just exponentially larger than, say, the Vietnam War protests or apartheid, where it would have to, like, I don't even know how it would be spread through the internet if it's in, if it was the apartheid era.
Word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth, yeah. Basically.
Let me close on the politics, domestic politics on this, because we've kind of been skirting the issue a little bit. The White House clearly is concerned about the so-called youth vote. Does President Biden have reason to worry about the youth vote, Rachel?
I think that President Biden does have good reason to worry about the youth vote. I plan on voting for President Biden, but I think that there are people in our generation who feel that they cannot vote for President Biden. And personally, my feeling is, you know, as much as one might disagree with the course of action that President Biden has taken vis-a-vis the war in between Israel and Hamas, I think that, you know, Trump is exponentially more dangerous, not just for Israelis and for Palestinians, but for democracy at large. Because of this, I believe that the Democrats have to listen to young people and to try and, you know, put forth the best possible strategy.
Jonathan, does the White House have to worry about the youth vote?
Like, just personally, what I'm observing, and I'm sure others will see this as well, is there's an ongoing war in Gaza that people are protesting against, that the youth are pretty overwhelmingly opposing. And what the Biden administration is putting out is declassifying marijuana and like forgiving student loans every once in a while while they allow this to continue. And I think the youth see that. That's
Jordan?
All I have to say.
I think that at least for the past two elections, a lot of the youth, and speaking as one of them, has been choosing between the lesser of two evils, which I think needs, honestly, is more important than if Biden gets the votes or not. I think that who we're electing to represent both parties is honestly like an issue at a fundamental level. I think that any person who's not honestly opposed to what's happening in Gaza and in Israel is subject to losing the youth vote, because as we've talked about before, much of the youth population is opposed to it. So,
Edmund?
Yeah, I totally agree with what my fellow students have said, that the Democratic Party and Joe Biden have, especially after 2020, want to take the youth vote for granted. I think the main problem would be turnout, I think, getting people to go out and vote. There's always been a lot of apathy among youth voters.
Right.
But I feel like even more so, there's a growing apathy as, you know, we see these problems that young people hold very important that go unanswered.
Rachel Burnett, Jonathan Park, Edmund Tuck, Jordan Renfrew, thank you all for taking part in our program, KNX In Depth Special Campus Fury. Let me mention again, for those of you who have been listening, we did reach out, as I said at the very outset, to the Chancellor of UCLA and the President of USC and other groups like Students for Justice in Palestine and the Hillel Foundations at both schools, USC and UCLA, and they have all declined or failed to respond, so just we have that on the record. And thank you all for listening.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
You. Thank you for having us.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.